Then good fortune struck, in the form of two American women. They were teaching in Nairobi, connected to some religious organization, and one day they came into the office where Barack was working. Your father struck up a conversation with them, and soon these women became his friends. They loaned him books to read and invited him to their house, and when they saw how smart he was, they told him that he should go to a university. He explained that he had no money and no secondary school certificate, but these women said they could arrange for him to take a correspondence course that would give him the certificate he needed. If he was successful, they said, they would try to help him get into a university in America. Barack became very excited and immediately rode away for this correspondence course. For the first time in his life, he worked diligently. Every night and during his lunch hours, he would study his books and do the lessons in his notebooks. A few months later, he sat for the exam at the American Embassy. The exam took several months to score, and during this wait, he was so nervous he could barely eat. He became so thin that we all thought he would die. Then one day, the letter came. I was not there to see him open it. I know that when he told me the news, he was still shouting with happiness. He still had no money, though, and no university had yet accepted him. Onyango had softened towards his son when he saw that he was becoming more responsible, but even he could not raise the money to pay university fees and transport abroad. So Barack wrote to the universities in America. He wrote and he wrote. Finally, a university in Hawaii wrote back and told him that they would give him a scholarship. No one knew where this place was, but Barack didn't care. He gathered up his pregnant wife and son and dropped them off with me, and in less than a month he was gone. What happened in America, I cannot say. I know that after less than 2 years, we received a letter from Barack saying that he had met this American girl, Anne, and that he would like to marry her. Now, Barry, I know that you have heard that your grandfather disapproved of this marriage. This is true, but it is not for the reasons you say. You see, Onyango did not believe your father was behaving responsibly. He wrote back to Barack saying, "How can you marry this white woman when you have responsibilities at home? Will this woman return with you and live as a Luo woman? Will she accept that you already have a wife and children? I have not heard of white people understanding such things. Their women are jealous and used to being pampered. But if I am wrong in this matter, let the girl's father come to my hut and discuss the situation properly. For this is the affair of elders, not children." He also wrote to your grandfather, Stanley, and said many of these same things. As you know, your father went ahead with the marriage. He only told Onyango what had happened after you were born. We are all happy that this marriage took place, because without it, we would not have you with us here now. But your grandfather was very angry at the time, and threatened to have Barack's visa revoked. And because he had lived with white people, perhaps Onyango did understand the white people's customs, better than Barack did. For when Barack finally returned to Kenya, we discovered that you and your mother had stayed behind, just as Onyango had warned. Soon after Barack came, a white woman arrived in Kisumu looking for him. At first, we thought this must be your mother, Anne. Barack had to explain that this was a different woman, Ruth. He said that he had met her at Harvard and that she had followed him to Kenya without his knowledge. I know that once Barack agreed to marry Ruth, she could not accept the idea of having Kazia as a second wife. That is how the children went to live with their father and his new wife in Nairobi. When Barack brought Roy and Alma back to visit, Ruth would have refused to accompany him and would not let Barack bring David or Mark. The others have told you what happened to your father in Nairobi. We saw him rarely, and he would usually stay only for a short time. Whenever he came, he would bring us expensive gifts and money and impress all the people with his big car and fine clothes. But your grandfather continued to speak harshly to him, as if he were a boy. Onyango was now very old. He walked with a cane and was almost blind. He could not even bathe without my help, which I think caused him shame. But age did not soften his temper. Later, when Barack fell from power, he would try to hide his problems from the old man. He continued to bring gifts that he could no longer afford, although we noticed that he arrived in a taxi instead of his own car. Only to me would he confide his unhappiness and disappointments. I would tell him he was too stubborn in his dealings with the government. He would talk to me about principles, and I would tell him that his principles weighed too heavily on his children. He would say I didn't understand, just as his father had said to me. So I stopped giving advice and just listened. That is what Barack needed most, I think, someone to listen to him. Even after things had improved again for him, and he had built this house for us, he remained heavy-hearted. With his children, he behaved just as Onyango had behaved towards him. He saw that he was pushing them away, but there was nothing he could do. He still liked to boast and laugh and drink with the men, but his laughter was empty. I remember the last time he visited Doñango before the old man died. The two of them sat in their chairs, facing each other and eating their food, but no words passed between them. A few months later, when Doñango finally went to join his ancestors, Bara came home to make all the arrangements. He said very little, and it's only when he sorted through a few of the old man's belongings that I saw him begin to weep.